You got to.
Wanna go? Okay. Good afternoon. Today's presentation, The Hidden Danger of Going Mobile and How to Mitigate Them with Intune, is proudly supported by Owen Dimoy and myself, Emily Wong. So, is everybody going mobile? Or should I ask, have you and your organization already gone mobile? Do you know many people or yourself use mobile devices for work, such as check emails or read documents? And have you noticed how many security breaches and vulnerabilities is associated with mobile applications and mobile devices? And I'm sure you're aware what the impact it would be for your organization. And have you noticed any of these vulnerabilities is related to users' lack of knowledge around security and privacy? I know there's a lot of questions. I promise this one will be last. Has anybody ever come to you and say, well, I'm such a small fish and no bad guy would want to come after me for my information? Certainly, it would be nice if all the users care and are sensible and have some knowledge around security. Having said that, there are so many security vulnerabilities out there, even security experts may not be able to get up to date and remember it all. Plus, all the hidden dangers out there. Therefore, is it fair then for us to expect the users to anticipate all the security risks and to know it all? And in today's presentation, we're going to do a couple of demos around the hidden dangers. And with that question in mind, we'll go to the first one, the unintended consequences. So last year, I was asked to review an off-the-shelf app. And whenever we do off-the-shelf app security review or just security review in general, it's really important for us to understand each vulnerability's impact to the business, as well as the likelihood for it to happen. In this particular case, it was a camera app. On one hand, there's a business requirement that we want to take high-quality photos, so that's as close to RAW format as possible. On the other hand, there's also constraint that we don't want this photo to be stored anywhere else in the cloud or in the place that we cannot control, so they have to be stored securely. This is nothing weird, it's actually for government agencies, so they just need the photos to be safe and have data sovereignty. So when I tested on my device, everything looked good. However, as I was writing the report using our team's test device, I noticed something interesting. And here I'm going to show you. Switched.
Yeah, there you go.
So for that, I'll need your collaboration. I'll take a photo of you. That's the camera app. And taking a photo. Hold on a sec. And as you can see, there are a lot of traffic that's going on here. And at the bottom of it, on this photo app, you will see it's uploading one photo. Just wait for it to come. You see a lot of traffic going to iCloud. And wait for it. And then there is this Amazon AWS call. And as you can see, the number is incrementing. And you can see the number here is incrementing as well. Wait for it. It will finish uploading. So I'm sure you guess what happened. The photo is uploaded to the cloud. Well, this certainly kind of breached the security requirement of this particular app in this use case. However, we can't really blame Apple for providing such a convenient service, and we can't expect them to anticipate whatever needs to be secure or not, or what information is sensitive or not. Similarly, it's also kind of hard to blame the app developer, because they also have the same constraint. They wouldn't know which photo needs to be securely stored. It cannot be uploaded to the cloud. Moreover, they also don't have control on the operating system level. So they cannot say, well, the photo needs to go out or not. So when I first looked at all this trace, I thought it's just doing some iCloud background services. Then it hits me. It's actually because on this test device, the iCloud sharing library photo was turned on. And I guess many of you, if you're using iPhone, you probably have that option turned on. It's almost kind of a default option. And on my own one, just because I don't like things on the cloud, so I always turn it off. So that's how I discovered this one. So this would have breached the security requirement. But when you think about it, it's actually really hard to anticipate the result. Imagine, when event A occurs, it could lead to B. When event B occurs, it could lead to C. When event C occurs, it could lead to D. And when event D occurs, it could lead to shit. So It is really hard for us human beings to imagine things which just happen from a chain event. And therefore, it's really hard for you to anticipate and ask a user to know it all as well. And that's the first example. And here comes the rescue from Owen.
So what we're going to do is we're going to jump over to my device here, which is actually connected to the... I am on 7. So I've got the Intune console open, and we're going to show how we can configure some of the settings and certain policies to be able to control the backup of your data into cloud services. So we're going to go through a basic scenario here. Part of the demo is I'm not going to try and create too many policies because it'll take a little while, so a lot of them are pre-baked, like a good demo person hopefully should do. So the first one we're going to go and have a look at is this demo policy down the bottom here. Can everyone read that all right? Oh, yeah, it's nice and big. So we've got a demo cloud backup policy. Now, if we go in and have a look at this policy, there's a couple of main areas that we can look at. The one we're going to get into, once the Wi-Fi kind of gives me some speed, here we go, we'll go into the cloud section. Now, as you can see, there's a number of different options that we can control on a mobile device. Now, this is in a corporate-owned scenario where the device is being used for corporate-only purposes. You would do slightly different things if it was a BYOD scenario. You'd use MAM policies, which we'll talk about a bit later. But in this scenario, you can see that we have the ability to control general backup of data to the cloud, to iCloud. We also have the ability to turn off specific settings at a more granular level. So we can go through and we can turn off the ability to sync documents to iCloud, photo stream to iCloud, disable iCloud photo sharing, or the photo library altogether. So we've done that on a demo device, and basically it's not a fun thing to show because it just hides a couple of options on the iPhone. But what this allows us to do is on an iPhone or on an Android, because there's equivalent policies for Android as well, that we can turn off their ability to sync data up onto the cloud. So what we'll do is we're going to now that we've shown that, we're going to hand over to Emily again, and she's going to take us through unprotected devices.
Thank you. There are many ways a device can be considered unprotected. So the bare minimum is you should have PIN code. Raise your hand if you don't have a PIN code. I hope if, oh, there is one. We need to talk afterwards. Better yet, you better have a complex passphrase. The reason for that is really simple. Imagine if you don't have a PIN code. So what happens is somebody just comes, swipe open your device, and read everything. But that's not actually the scary part. If you are a techer, you'd be smarter. You download an app. You will use this app, back out everything, plug into your computer, and then you can look at the photos, videos, you can look at text messages, call histories, and other type of files as well. And imagine if you download it all, it won't take too long, especially the sensitive ones like text messages. Then you can browse it later on casually with a cup of coffee and nobody would notice, right? Similarly, imagine if you were backing up your device without passcode, without password protection. That's also kind of dangerous. So even if you have passcode on your device, people can't unlock it, but you've backed it up without passcode protection. What happens then? These are all the iTunes backups on this computer. The second one is the backup for this particular device. So what happens is I open it up. Again, I can look at the message, I can look at the context, and I can just browse it. And you can buy this app easily, and I'm not selling it for anything. However, if you look at this first device, you'll see a little lock there. If you tap on that and try to go to any of the page, it would ask you to decrypt first. So, Owen, come to the rescue again.
So it comes really important for users to, not every user is going to remember how to encrypt their backups of iTunes or, you know, if it's their personal device that's enrolled for work. So we got to kind of help them along that way. And by enrolling their device, we are allowed to, we can configure these policies. So what I'm going to do here is I've actually created, we've got two kind of policies that we're going to run through. One is a template policy that you can create with Intune called a mobile device security policy. This is a more generic policy that can apply across multiple platforms that are under management in Intune. So as you'll be able to see as we kind of walk through, you'll be able to see that some of the settings that we can apply actually apply to multiple platforms. So it's a good way to set a base level for your organization as to all of the different things that you want, you'd require them to have. So for example, in this scenario, we want them to have a password to unlock their mobile devices to hopefully stop people from just being able to pick up the device and just look at whatever's on the phone. We want it to be an alphanumeric kind of password. You have the option to have alphanumeric or numeric, of course. Now, one of the things here below that is a setting that's kind of behaves differently on Windows versus iOS devices. So this minimum number of character sets on a Windows device basically tells that the password needs to be of a uppercase or a lowercase or different types of character sets, whereas on the iPhone, it actually changes it to say how many complex characters you need. So do you need like $3 signs and a pound or something like that, not uppercase, lowercase. So there is a bit of a difference in that setting. We can set minimum password lengths. Probably 4 is a bit short nowadays. You're able to set simple passwords, so that basically stops users from being able to set something simple like 1, 2, 3, 4, or using the same number over and over again to get the password. Kind of the same thing that we would do in our traditional Windows environments. Now, if we scroll down a bit further, we can see that we can turn on allow fingerprint to unlock a device. Now, fingerprints have been introduced onto a lot of devices, and if you think about the Apple Touch ID, when that was first introduced, that saw a massive adoption in the use of passcodes on mobile devices, so increasing the security posture of everyone's devices in general. So about 90% of Touch ID-enabled devices actually have a passcode set on them, which is really good to see. And it takes away the pain from an administrator point of going to users and going, hey, you can enroll into our platform, but you're going to have a 6-character password because they don't want to have to enter that every time they want to use their phone. So having something like a fingerprint reader is going to make their life a lot easier being able to use that. Now, one of the other things I was going to do is show you the kind of more specific policy that we created here, which is kind of set up exactly the same, but it's just related to purely iTunes. Now, one of the things that Emily showed in her demo was the ability for her to take one of those iTunes backups and just be able to go and have a look through the backup and extract any content that she wanted, like people's messages. So what we can do as administrators in Intune is we can actually go through in the policy and we can set that the default behavior for backing up anything is that it has to be encrypted. So that stops people from being able to just purely open up a iTunes backup and have a look at the data. So that's just a way of increasing the posture for your end users. And to be honest, everyone should be encrypting their backups. And with that, we're going to kind of jump over to the next scenario, which is one that I'll demonstrate. And this is where we talk about the kind of and it ties into a session that was run yesterday around managed applications. So I have here a device that we've enrolled into the demonstration environment we have here. Thank you. And basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to show the difference between the personal and the work side of the device. So to make it a little bit clearer, we're using two different sets of applications to make it quite obvious, but you can, for example, with a lot of the Microsoft apps, they now understand the personal and the work context, and I'm sure you've seen a couple of sessions about that, especially the Office mobile apps work really well at doing this. But to make our demo a little bit clearer, we've kind of separated them out. So the idea is that you as an organization want to make sure that all of your corporate-based documents stay secure on the device and the user's not able to take the kind of the corporate information and put it into their personal context on the device. So we'll start off with the scenario of I'm working from home on my personal kind of stuff, and I go in to open up an email that I've sent to myself, and it's just a Word document that's got some information in it. Now what I can do here is I can actually open this document. That was the default viewer that iOS comes with for Word documents, but what you can see is I actually have the ability to open it in a whole raft of applications on the device. I also have the ability to select content. Now bear with me with this because I always have a bit of fun trying to do some multi-select. And I can take that content that I've copied and I can paste it into, for example, my notes application that I may be using. Now let's say I switch over and kind of start doing some work. Well, I got sent this email, surprisingly from myself again, and this document has some more secure work content. If I were to go open in, I'm only able to see the apps that work is allowing me to be able to work with in a secure context on this device. So here we have Word, Adobe Acrobat, and OneDrive. And if we look at that copy-paste scenario, select all. If I were to go back to that same notes application that I was using before to keep my notes, and I was trying to paste, you'd see that the paste option is now gone because we're able to control the traffic flow of data between applications on the device. Now, how do we achieve this? We achieve this through Intune's mobile application management capabilities. Now, this stretches across both corporate-owned devices, but it also stretches across BYOD devices that may be enrolled into another MDM platform. What we're going to demonstrate is just using the Intune console. I just wanted to keep things a little bit simple for all my demos. But what we've got here is, I'll show you the first part, which is we've loaded a whole lot of applications into our application catalog that we deploy out to end users. So here you see that Adobe Acrobat application, the Intune managed browser that we may use to demo some stuff a little later on, OneDrive, Outlook, Pulse Secure VPN client, which we also will demo a little bit later on, and that Word application. Now, how do you know that an application supports mobile application management? If you click on the application and you scroll down here, you'll be able to see that that application is actually supports app policies. Now, to create those app policies, it's pretty straightforward. Within the policy section of the Intune console, we can go into a configuration policy. To create them, you would hit Add. You would go down to the software section, and you would select the mobile application management policy against the platform that you wanted to apply. So in this case, we're doing it against iOS because we had a whole lot of iOS devices that we could use. I won't create one from scratch. I'll use one that I baked earlier, and we'll open that one up and see what we can do. So within the policy, we have the ability to restrict access to web content. So if I had a Word document that had a hyperlink in it and I want to click that hyperlink, I can control that to make sure that hyperlink only opens in the Intune secured managed browser. But I have that ability to do some data relocation controls, and that's kind of what we were demonstrating a little bit earlier. So that includes the ability to prevent at an application level the backup of data to iTunes or iCloud, kind of covering off that first scenario that Emily was talking about as well in a more granular fashion. We have the ability to restrict how the application is able to transfer data between different managed applications. So we've set it here that we can only transfer data between policy managed apps. We can receive data from any application on the device, and that might be a scenario where you're on a web page and you're going, oh, hey, that's some really interesting content. I'll just copy that out and put that into an application that I want to work with. We're preventing save as, and we're able to control the copy and paste behavior in a couple of different ways. So we can block copy and paste so that any managed application cannot copy or paste to anything else. Be kind of a bit of a hindrance to our end users if they wanted to do some stuff. We can lock it down so that it can only be copy and paste between managed applications, or we can support managed applications with the ability to paste in data from another non-managed application. Now, for devices where probably, and this is probably a little bit, there's two ways you could look at the access requirement. So you could have an access requirement where you've got a super sensitive app that you want to add additional PIN requirements. So the PIN on the device is not enough. You want to actually add some more. Or these policies work really well for where you've got a BYOD scenario using the other kind of Intune console to configure these policies, where you would ask the user, because you can't control whether that device has a PIN on it in the BYOD scenario, because it may be under other management. So you have the ability on your managed applications that you apply your policies to say, I require a PIN, for example, and then you can set the PIN requirements. It's a little bit more rudimentary than what you get with like the underlying OS support. But you also have the ability to require corporate credentials. So if you want them to, every time they access the application, to enter their corporate applications. And then you can set how long it is before they have to re-enter their PIN number. Now, if you're really horrible, you can set it to zero. And that means every time they switch in and out of applications, they have to put the PIN number in. I had this going from the demo for a little while, and I actually got so annoyed with it, I turned it off. But you can also set how long they can be offline. And then, again, we can set some encryption levels as well. So that shows us how we can then create the policy. Now, how we tie the application and the policy together is basically within the application section that we were in earlier, we can configure a couple of options. So when we go manage deployment, which we would do to deploy the application, we can select who we target the application as we normally would. We can select how we want the deployment to be done. And here we get to select the mobile application management policy. Now, by default, it's going to select the first policy you have. So if you want to have multiple policies, you can have different settings so that you could say some applications have no restrictions while others have more. So in this environment, we've only set one. We've got the ability to set a VPN profile, which we'll cover off a little bit later on, and also mobile application configuration settings if you've got a separate policy to kind of configure up a mobile app for you, what you need. So that really allows us now to kind of, not only are we preventing the data from going up into the cloud, but on the device we're actually now helping the user keep their content separate from their personal and their work lives and making sure that the two don't mix. Now what I'll do is I'll hand over to Emily. I'm just getting my slides in the right order here. One of the things I did want to show is, switching. So this is a list of all the mobile application management enabled apps that Intune currently supports. The link down the bottom here on the slide, you can kind of reference that if you want to see if there's any new ones being added. But as you can see, Outlook mobile app is there. All of the kind of major Office mobile applications are there as well. And included are a couple of the standard, the Intune managed applications. So for an Intune managed browser, maps, picture viewer, video viewer, and then of course down the bottom we've got a whole lot of the third party applications. So that's growing as well, which is really good to see. So we've got a special version of Adobe Acrobat. If you were looking in the store, you'd see Adobe Acrobat for Intune. We've got SAP and Citrix ShareFile as well in that list. So now we're going to kind of talk about the switching over to that kind of context of, you know, we all work out and about and sometimes need to connect to open Wi-Fi. Now, we've all heard about the doom and gloom of using open Wi-Fi and what some of the risks are. Well, here I'm actually connected to open Wi-Fi, and I don't know how I'm connected to the specific Wi-Fi. So, Emily, why don't you explain what's going on?
Well, the best way to explain is to do it with this little device and a little bit of Wi-Fi adapter. So let's have a look. So this is running at the moment. As you can see in the terminal, there are a lot of directed probe requests for foreign SSID, like Ignite 2016, Mansky City, and some other ones that you may recognize that could be your home network or your work network. So what do these probe requests mean? Mega Wi-Fi, somebody's home network's mega Wi-Fi. So what do this mean? It just means your device has previously connected to some of those Wi-Fis. Remiga, is that your home Wi-Fi, somebody? And your device remembers them. That's why you realize how convenient it is whenever you go home, it automatically connects, and whenever you go to work, it automatically connects. So your device is actually constantly sending out proper requests and say, I've connected this one before, so are you there? Home network, are you there? Or Ignite, are you there? And if the Ignite access point is around, then they will also say, yes, I'm here, and that's how you establish connection. So it's certainly very convenient. And with this little Wi-Fi adapter, what it allows me to do is, using the Android pen testing device, to gather, harvest all your Wi-Fi hotspot that you previously connect to, and then in turn, broadcast them so that your device will connect to it automatically. I have limited the range and the attack so that please don't connect to mine because it's using my 4G and stuff.
So you have a problem.
So if I turn on my Wi-Fi here, you will see it's automatically connect to free cafe Wi-Fi. It's just a fake one that it has previously been connected to, and then this is the one that I'm broadcasting as well. So as you can imagine, if I'm sitting actually in a cafe or in an airport, then it's really easy. I just turn it on and then everybody will just connect through. And once you connect through it, that means all your traffic will be routing through my device. It's quite portable. Nobody would look. It's a bit suspicious, I guess. And then what we'll do is maybe we'll just run a TCP dump command over here. It's just like I'm chatting, but I'm doing other stuff. Let's run a TCP dump, for example, say. And then we'll look at that. So it's running TCP dump. Let's say I go to a website, for example, New Zealand Herald, and you'll see the packages changing that number. So it's capturing all the packages. And then we'll just stop it right there. Yep. So what happens then is, of course, I can then grab the package. So I've named it traffic.pcap. And as you probably have seen Wireshark before, I guess we generate a lot of traffic because there are a lot of you in here. Let's wait for a second for it to come up. So once that down, then you could go to here. Yep. Then you could just open it up in Wireshark or whatever your favorite traffic app is. And then you can look through all the HTTP requests, right? Or a simpler way is to just look like that, and then you'll see all the content it's trying to probe it for. And this, of course, is just one website, and you can intercept other stuff or do something fancy like DNS spoof. So for example, say if you want to go to facebook.com, and then I just intercept and then return you a fake facebook.com, and then you enter your username and password, and I'll say, oh, incorrect username, but capture information. And then on your second attempt, I submit to the real Facebook, so you will think you just, you know, have big thumb and type it wrong or something. Continue with your life, and then that's how I gather information. And what's even more dangerous, you probably reuse the password. How many people reuse passwords? Honestly, then that's how you leak all your information. So that's how a Wi-Fi attack would work. So here comes rescue again, Owen.
So what can we do to kind of help mitigate against that? We're not going to be able to necessarily stop people from being able to join open Wi-Fi. And there's scenarios when we're traveling around that we actually want to be able to get onto an airport Wi-Fi so we can check where our flights are and that kind of thing. But when our users are trying to work with corporate data and trying to connect to corporate systems, maybe there's some things that we can do to protect them. An example would be creating a VPN connection on their device and having that VPN connection automatically initiated when they were starting to access corporate content. So as an example, what kind of things would we need to be able to do that? So the first thing, of course, is we're going to need our devices enrolled into Intune. The next part is we're going to need to use network device enrollment services to provision a certificate down to the device. Now, the reason we're going to do this is we want to make the user experience for the VPN as seamless as possible. And these certificates we can use for a whole lot of other authentication mechanisms on the device so that users don't have to constantly change their password and put passwords into access systems. And then we need an Intune-supported VPN solution. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to quickly cover off what that certificate enrollment process looked like. I was going to do a build-out slide, but I don't trust myself with a clicker, so I thought I'd just have it all in one big slide. So basically what happens is the Intune policy is pushed down onto the device to push out certificates. The device then goes and talks to our internal NDES server to get a certificate request. As part of that, the Intune connector that is installed on the NDES server authenticates the user to make sure, well, the device or the user, to make sure that it's a valid request before asking the certificate authority that you internally run to publish out a cert for you to use. And then that gets pushed onto the device. So that's how we kind of, at a really quick level, get certificates down. If you want to know more information, come and have a chat to me afterwards, and I can point you to some really good links on how this works. So there's also the need for a supported VPN solution. So there are a couple of VPN solutions out there from Cisco, F5. The one we're using in our demo environment is Pulse Secure VPN. It was a nice little VPN appliance that I could run on my Hyper-V box in my lab and have connections working for free. I didn't actually have to go and buy anything, which was great. And basically, Pulse Secure VPN is also one of the only VPN clients that actually supports per-app VPNs on an Android platform. So if you are looking at using per-app VPN capabilities on Android, you may want to be looking at that one. So what do we have to do then to get this all configured up? So I'll just jump onto my device. So the first thing is we have to deploy the VPN client, which you can see here. Then we need to set up a whole lot of those policies that we were kind of talking about. So the first policy we have to set up is the trusted root certificate policy. So I've got one that's kind of pre-cooked here. So if we look, it's a pretty easy kind of policy. Basically, all this is doing is taking the root certificate authority that we have running internally and basically taking that cert and making sure it's put onto all of the Intune managed devices so that any certs that CA publishes are trusted by those devices. a bit like you would do to your internal, you know, your internal Windows machines, you'd publish out your internal CA certificate. So to import that, we just take the SIR file that we've taken from the certificate, and we import that in, and then we'd save the policy. We'd then deploy that policy to the target users. I won't show that because it's already kind of done. The next part would be to set up the certificate enrollment policy. Now, this policy is pretty straightforward. There is a bit of fun in getting the kind of back-end infrastructure sorted out, but I got it sorted in a weekend. So basically, the first part is you specify the server that you're connecting to enroll. So that basically is the NDES server. Now, usually that'll be behind some sort of application proxy to make sure it's nice and secure. And then that would have the NDES connector from Intune installed on there as well. There's really good documentation on TechNet around how to get this all up and running if you're really interested as well. So the next part is we are able to specify the certificate properties that are going to be used to generate the request to the NDES server and our internal CA. So we can specify what kind of subject name we want the certificate to have, whether we want to have alternative subject names. So in this case, I'm using email address. You could use the UPN as well. How long that certificate's valid for, the key usages, the key size, which is always really important to make sure you've got a nice, secure certificate, and then what key usages are used. So you've got a couple of different scenarios here that you can use. So there's any purpose, so that cert can be used for anything. And this will really come down to whatever your authenticating device is on the other end as to what kind of certificate it's expecting. So in this case, my VPN appliance is expecting a client-based certificate for doing client-based auth, but you can do secure email and so forth. And then we have to tie it back to the root certificate authority CA cert that we've just published out policy as well. So they all nicely tie together so that Intune can make sure that it knows how everything is working on the end device and published correctly. So that cert can be used, that policy can be used to put a cert down onto a device. That certificate doesn't just need to be used for VPN, it can be used for secure Wi-Fi access as well. But in this case, we're going to use it for the VPN profile that we're creating. So here's the VPN profile that we've created. So it's pretty straightforward. The first thing we do is we give it some nice descriptive name. We select the different type of connections that are supported. So there's a bit more of the list that we showed earlier. We specify the server IP address. By the way, these are all fake domain names, so just for security purposes. And we specify that we're going to use certificate-based authentication. If you're going to do per-app VPNs, you don't want to use username and password. In fact, most of the per-app VPN setups don't support using username and password. We set the profile that we created that gets the certificate request, and then we can set up some interesting things in iOS. The Android policies are done a bit different, but for example here I've said that if you're using the Safari browser, I want to anyone that goes to whatsmyip.org is going to get redirected through the VPN connection that we establish on the fly. We can also do some other rules around making sure that if they're on certain Wi-Fi networks that we generate their connection automatically as well, but I thought I'd just use a domain name. So you could put in all your corporate addresses here that you wanted to. Even if you had an internal system that wasn't published externally, you'd be able to publish it out through this, and then they would connect to the VPN and then get access, so it could make quite seamless user experience. If you have any proxy settings that are used, are required to get out to the internet from your VPN connected device, you can put them in here as well. Now to tie that all together, so on an Android, just note for an Android device, you actually have to create a separate policy for the per app VPN stuff, and it's a custom configuration policy. There's some good documentation up on Intune, on TechNet. Around that, but it does take a little bit of work, and I had a bit of fun with getting it running. That's why we just kept with the iOS. So there we basically can then start tying things together. So we showed that under the managed deployment settings, we can set certain apps to use the VPN. So in this scenario, I've said the Intune managed browser has to use a VPN, and we've set the VPN policy that it uses. So what does this look like on an end user device? So here we'll jump back onto that managed device that I had earlier. And I'll unlock the device. Hope the demo gods are going to be good to me. So here we'll jump on to the Safari browser. Now you can see when you do a Google search for what's my IP, you get to see the public IP of the connection you're currently on. So we're on probably a different network to you guys, but this is the public IP address that we get. Now, if I were to go down to the second link, which was the one that we set up to say, hey, if you go to this URL, you need to be redirected to the VPN, you should see some stuff happen. So it takes a few seconds, but up the top, very top of the status bar, you see that the VPN icon's just kicked in. And when I go to the page, you see that I've now suddenly got a completely different IP address. So that is the public IP address of the internal lab network that I've got. So you can quite clearly see that there are two different kind of networks and the VPN is actually doing its job. So the other way we can do that is we can also show that, you know, we set that the Intune Managed Browser was another application that had to send all of its traffic through the VPN. So in this case, if I were to do that same Google What's My IP lookup, you would see that it's using that same IP address for the VPN connection, not the one from our public interface. So that's so what we've done there is shown the ability for you to be able to provide a mechanism for your users to be secure when they're out there on open connections, but also to help manage that process so they don't have to think about when do I have to initiate a connection, when shouldn't I, and you can kind of give them some really good communications around that. If they're going to use a Safari browser, they can then get that. If you don't want to do it through that, you can then give them some comms around saying, okay, well, if you're on an unsecured network and you want to access corporate resources, you have to use the Intune Managed Browser to get those resources. Now, one of the things that we're going to demo, because we've probably got a bit of time, which is good, is the dangers of having a rooted device. One of the things that I didn't show in the managed application policy is that we can actually control the behavior of whether an application can run on a rooted device, a jailbroken or rooted device. Now, it's kind of important to understand that, you know, a jailbroken or a rooted device can be reasonably insecure, and users are probably rooting it so that they can download their own applications without having to pay for them. That's one of the main reasons that some people do this. But what Emily's going to demonstrate shortly is the dangers of what you can do on a rooted device to applications that are running on that device. So in this scenario, it's not so much about, hey, I can get free applications. It's more about what are the dangers that my users pose or what they could potentially do to my applications or my backend infrastructure when they have a rooted device and how we can potentially block some of those applications from running. We also have the ability to set up compliance policies that would allow you to report on people who are running jailbroken devices. So now with that, I'll hand over to Emily, who's going to do our final demo.
If I can get in. Have any of you played 2048 before? Yep, so it's just a fun game because we can't really demo serious apps and jailbreaking stuff. So it's quite simple. If you combine 2 and 2 together, it becomes a 4. If you combine 2 and 4 together, it becomes an 8. And that's why it's called 2048, because in order to go to 2048, you actually need to have 1,024 2s. So that's quite hard to play. And therefore, in this case, what we're trying to do then is to play the game a bit smarter. But just let me quickly check. Sorry, I had some problem connecting to the Wi-Fi here. Let's just give it a go. Yeah, it doesn't go.
Can you get them back to your phone?
Yeah. Sorry, just give me a sec. So what you can do with a jailbroken device is that you could reverse engineer source code of an application. And so I've already reverse engineered the source code, and I had a look at the open method. So just to give you an idea, if I can't demo it, I'll just give you an idea what it looks like. So basically, you can jailbreak an application, and this will just come up with a package. And then when you open up the package, you'll see some files. It's basically just like the artwork, which is the logo. And then when you export that, you will see a file. So the file will pretty much look like that. Oops. So what does this file contains? It's all the various public method. So an attacker can just come here and look at all the method. So the one I found that was quite interesting was this one, because I looked through quite of them before. And then if you look through them, this particular method was of interest because there's some this class over here. So what it has is a couple of methods. This seems to be like main class. And if you look at what's inside, it has like add gestures, become active, or create a game, and add save tile, start game, and end game, and all that. Oops. So what you can do is, let's see if it works again.
Do they not show you?
Doesn't work. So what could happen is that when you access the device, then you can SSH into the device and then attach to the running process and then manipulate the process. So this is just one game for demoing purpose, but as you can imagine, you could use it for other serious business app as well. And from this end, it's more about how an attacker would attack your company and your company's application, and not the other way around, which is where you attack your users.
Yeah. So basically, a bit of a shame that the demo didn't work. It's actually quite funny, because she can set a really high score in 2048 that I don't think any of us can beat. Basically, she puts all of the tiles in 2048 to 2048 and then joins them all up. Pretty powerful way of being able to see actually what are the dangers of being able to have a rooted device and what someone can do when they know how to extract information out of it, and especially if it's a malicious end user who wants to try and break something in your corporation because of something you did. And that's why it's really important that we're able to report using Intune on the ability for users to run jailbroken devices, or take our managed applications that we're deploying and make sure that they can't actually run any of those managed applications on a jailbroken device. So that kind of concludes most of our the demos that we wanted to do at this stage. Shame that one didn't work, but hey, that's the demo gods for you at an Ignite session. So what we thought we'd do is we'd open the floor to a few questions and see what you guys thought. So you can, and that's something we haven't covered off, but there are other sessions and previous sessions in previous years that talk about the fact that, yes, you can actually integrate your Intune management console with Config Manager, and then Config Manager becomes the management platform that you use to configure all of these policies. In most cases, you'll get pretty much the same level of policies. There are occasions where some of the policies will differ ever so slightly because Intune is, you know, a cloud-based service that is updated at a constant pace, and in fact, there's a whole lot of new updates that are coming at the end of October, for example, whereas Config Manager just sometimes takes a little bit longer to get some of those settings. But in most cases, what we've demonstrated here, a lot of that stuff you'll be able to just configure as policies within the Config Manager console. Just due to processing requirements, I didn't have the ability to stand up a whole lot of additional demo environments to show from Config Manager. Any other questions? Yep. A lot of the stuff that you can configure is pretty much exactly the same. I can't think off the top of my head right now as to anything that you would specifically lose. In a lot of the cases, you can do conditional access, so making sure that, you know, people can't get access to things like Office 365 or on-prem Exchange, SharePoint, those types of things. You can have those still configured, either if they're Config Manager or an Intune. So yeah, can't think of anything straight off the top of my head that you kind of lose, but you know, someone in the audience will probably know just as well. I see a few smiling faces there. Any other questions? So laptops are a really interesting scenario. So Intune's really good at being able to manage mobile devices, and it has come from a background of being able to do PC management, but there is a very different experience that you get from managing a device using the PC scenario versus the modern mobile device management protocols that you get. So if we use Windows 10 for an example, you can enroll Windows 10 as a mobile device, and that gives you the ability to pretty much do all of the kind of configuration stuff that we saw today. But if you were to enroll it as a PC, a lot of the configuration stuff you start to lose. So you don't get to, you can control some firewalls and those types of things. So you want to be treating them as mobile devices as much as possible, but you do get some differences. If you start talking about BYOD as a scenario, Intune now has the capability to support management of BYOD devices, and that scenario is quite different to what we demonstrated here, where most devices would be a corporate-owned device that you would have fully enrolled and full control over them. In a BYOD scenario, you have the same mobile application management policies that we were showing you, where you can configure, you know, the moving of data between applications. But in those scenarios, the user would then have to when they access, like for example, an Office mobile application, they go to sign in with their corporate credentials, they would get the mobile application management policies applied. The beauty of the Intune supporting BYOD scenarios is that you could have third parties or users that are under another MDM provider still be able to get access to your content and have them managed by being able to do the Intune managed applications. I'll see if I can bring it up. It's kind of ad-libbing it out, but there is a separate Azure console. We'll see if it's going to play ball for me.
Oh, yeah. Is it 8?
7. So if we have a look under here, if you scroll down to the bottom, more services, this is the new Intune console for BYOD, once I find it. Probably scroll past it. Yeah. Probably have, yeah. What was that? Yeah. Oh yeah, there we go. It wouldn't let me do that before. Yep, there we go. So we can favorite that onto our console. And we can see it down the bottom. So here we get we kind of get to be able to set up the same kind of policies, but it's at a BYOD level, so quite different, and that we don't have the full granular controls that you would have when you have a device fully enrolled. So you do have to be aware that BYOD does give you some different scenarios, and as a corporate, you would have to evaluate whether you'd want to use the Intune mobile application management functionality purely by itself, or that you needed more granular control and you actually wanted to have them enrolled as a full Intune managed device. But as you can see, you can create some policies and you can apply them. This has literally got nothing set up because we didn't plan to demo any of this. And you're able to do kind of application, in-app wiping and those types of things. But yeah, it is the MAM capability is a bit different and you don't have as much granular control.
I got it sorted.
Oh, you got the demo sorted?
If you still want to see, that is. Yep.
It's always good when we can get a demo working.
I know. It's been lucky so far. So anyway, as I was saying before, I've already managed SSH. There's some network problem. And then if you do a grip of 204A this game, then you'll see the process code, which, well, let me just start it again. So this is the process code, right? So then we go, it's a bit laggy. We attach to this process 771. So it's a bit slow, I'm running too many virtual machines. And then as I was telling you before that I realized this is the class I'm interested in, and then what I can do is say instantiate this class, that's the main class. So I got a holder instance of it, and then I know one of the method is game over. Ta-da! But that's
the boring. That's the boring part of the demo. No one wants to end the game that soon.
Yeah, and in order not to type. Sorry. Oops.
Did you lose your...
Yep.
Everybody likes to have lots of desktops open.
That's how you demo. Yep. Just give me a sec.
She's just got to find the command that she wants to run.
Otherwise, I have to type a for loop. And all the computers are slowing down. Sorry. Do you want to answer that question first? I'll come back and shock you later.
So any more questions? Yep. Yep. So you. Yeah. So if we use the BYOD scenario, and where it's a personal owned device, and you're only using Intune's MAM capability. Basically, you can only pull back the application data that you've deployed down to the device. Now, if it's a fully Intune managed application, you do have some capabilities. So I can go through, I can lock devices, I can do you can do what we would call an enterprise wipe, where we just pull back the things that we've deployed down to the device. And if you really need to, you can do a full destructive wipe. It would be something that I would be very hesitant to do in real life. But definitely you can pull that data back, and a user can unenroll themselves if you want to as well. There's different scenarios. If you put them into, like on an iOS device, if you put into supervised mode, means that it's fully locked into management, or if you use Apple's device enrollment program to have them automatically provisioned before you send them out, same scenario, users won't be able to unprovision out of the management platform. But yeah, like this device here, I just manually enrolled it, so I could unenroll that device, and then you would see all the content that I've pushed down to that app, all the business apps that I pushed down would just disappear. Did
cool.
you figure it?
Yeah. Can you guess what that command will do? let's see. And that's how you play the game. So you can still continue to play, which is pretty awesome. And then you actually can do it again and again and again.
Can you change it to 4096?
Yeah, you can, but the color will change to, what is it, 204 what?
4096.
Yeah, I actually recognize the color as well. So anyway, that's how you play a game and beat my previous best record. And if you've seen anyone done better, let me know. Yeah, but I guess in the conclusion, we're saying that there are a lot of ways you can mitigate the risks, but of course, Intune is not a silver bullet as well.
Yeah, you do need to remember that you know, nothing in IT is a silver bullet. So all we're trying to do with Intune is help mitigate some of these risks. We're also trying to help make the user's experience as seamless as possible where we can, so that they don't have to think about some of the security risks. We just kind of handle that for them. So with that, thank you guys. I hope you enjoy the session. Make sure you put in your evaluations so that you can win a prize. I think it's an Xbox and a Surface. So excellent. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Enjoy your afternoon.